A very good morning to you. Welcome into today's programme. Now, there is a lot coming in on traffic today. Apparently, the Headford Road, the N84, is backed all the way to beyond Barna Waste this morning. So that's where they're stuck there. And another caller has been on to us to say, Keith, it's absolutely ridiculous. Gridlocked all the way from Glenamaddy all the way into Galway this morning. How are we supposed to live like this because of a crash on the bridge in Galway City? Now, though, let me move on because it's maybe we lighten the programme in a moment from there, but it's quite some serious stuff today in the programme. Again, we began the programme today quite simply looking at a number of issues, including teachers. We went from that, and from the INTO, we went from that straight into child poverty. We went from there into scams, and now we're actually going to the older people, indeed, and older care, because I'm joined by the Sage Advocacy CEO, Mervyn Taylor, and more government involvement is needed in the care for older people. 8 in 10 say care is overly concentrated amongst private providers, and Mervyn joins you on the line. Mervyn, good morning.
Good morning to you.
Thanks for joining us today on the programme. I'm of the age, by the way, and I've nothing against private operators, but I'm of the age, and I remember there was no private operators, but it was all public care which was given. We seem to have gone away from that model.
I think the issue here is not whether it's public or private, but it's the extent to which the public realm has been hollowed out. Like not wishing to discuss your age or indeed my own, but I think that people will remember some older facilities as probably being old, some of them famine era type buildings. Indeed, there was fear of county homes, and to a certain extent, the public facilities, rather than modernise or build new. There was a little of that, but it was there were tax breaks back in the 2000s to incentivize private nursing homes. They were actually, at one stage, private nursing homes were designated as industrial buildings for tax purposes. Now, I know you might find that hard to believe. That ended in 2009, but there was a kind of a big move towards, let's get some private nursing homes. The issue is not the ownership so much as, but if we have too few and not good enough public facilities to support older people who need some form of congregated care, and that's only one part of the whole spectrum of supports that are needed. But if we don't have enough good public facilities, then in the event of a collapse of any sector, the HSC is ultimately the provider of last resort, and it's not able to provide. And you can see in yesterday's, or in fact today's Irish Times, I think it is, there's reports about a particular nursing group that's in clearly in difficulties.
Yeah.
And if the HSC, as I repeat, is the provider of last resort, it needs to build back up the range and the quality of provision so that people can have respite care, people can have day centres, but people can also have longer term care. Most importantly, a lot of people need home care to actually keep them in their homes and not be going into nursing homes.
But you see, Mervyn, this is where you and I won't disagree about anything, to be quite honest. But I mean, the rating scale used to get somebody home care is off the Richter scale altogether. It's bananas. We've spoken in the last couple of years about somebody being 0.2 of a point out and couldn't get an extra couple of hours care and ends up then having to live with family for the rest of their lives because they couldn't get the care in their own home. So that needs to be reviewed from there. I mean, there's so much collectively, and if you take the state, as a state, they have so many assets, they have to be in a good position to rehabilitate some of the assets and bring back the care that we're talking about from there.
Well, old buildings won't care for people, like then, and they need more care than is sometimes. Sometimes actually makes financial sense. But let's come back to the thing of supporting people where they most want to live, which is their own home and within their own communities. There is a commission on care, which is why we commissioned this Red Sea poll on trying to take the pulse of the Irish public in advance of this commission on care, which is to be established in the new year by government. And clearly, that commission on care has to look at this issue of the bias towards residential care when the clear need is for a lot of people, well, we need more residential care as a population of older people grows. But we also need to be working much harder to keep more people at home. Now, we've got, there's a couple of things. One is to do with skills. There's also availability of people to do the work. But there's also that question has been raised, even by some in the private sector, that actually it's not just about a shortage of staff. It's about the way in which people are paid or the levels at which their people are paid. Some older people would like to actually hire staff themselves. And there are platforms available for to allow online platforms to allow that and sort of cut out the middleman. There's a whole wider range of supports needed. And this is why this commission on care is so important, is to actually get down to the nuts and bolts. What is it that older people actually need as opposed to the schemes that are provided at the moment? And how are we going to pay for it?
Well, that's where the willingness has got to be. I mean, I know a little bit about care for the elderly and for the older person, but I mean, it's a fight, it's a struggle, it's an ongoing struggle indeed for family members. But these are the people, and I say this every day on this program at some stage, these are the people that create the wonderful country that we're living in now, and yet we're not in a position to be able to provide for them.
Yeah, I think this is like on RT last night, people were talking about this is something that has crept up on us. It hasn't crept up on us. There's been great policy since back to the 80s and the 90s. There's been excellent policy in relation to what's needed for older people. The problem about it is actually implementing it. And we are really, really behind in terms of home supports, but even their immediate things, and I'm thinking of particularly of the great work done by Dr. Jerry Crowley up in Mulroney. St. Brendan's is under threat, and like people will be transferred to Castlebar if that facility, which great community effort went into creating, if that doesn't get sufficient funding to stay open. These are practical immediate issues, and there is a clear issue about the equity of funding going to facilities that keep people either in their home or close by their communities. These are the kind of practical issues of today that we have to kind of deal with. But the commission has to deal with these longer term issues. How are we going to get a system developed, and how are we going to pay for it that will be biased towards care in the community, so that in it's only if it's really needed that you go in to say a nursing home, and that if you do need to go into a nursing home, that it is sufficiently well paid, that your care is of a high standard, and that you get all the therapies you need, because at the moment you actually are paying additional costs very often for very basic things, there's increasing problem of debt among older people who are living in residential care.
And again, from a SAGE point of view, is SAGE Advocacy and the group, CEO Mervyn Taylor, who I'm talking to, and again, I'm not referring to, I read in the Irish Times about the group you're talking about. I didn't realise it was in today's Irish Times, and I flicked through it, I didn't realise that. But I mean, the situation quite simply is that HICWA have a role in all of this. Do you think that HICWA have an overburdening role on this?
Well, HICWA have no role at the moment. They have a role in regulating and inspecting residential facilities, designated centres, nursing homes. There are regulations on the way in relation to the whole area of how we will regulate home care. And there's been quite a protracted consultation process on that, which is coming to an end. I think the question here is really about funding. And this is really the issue, is we've got to get one integrated system. So rather than having all these schemes, like a nursing home support scheme and a home care scheme, we need one integrated system which is biased towards home. And that means that, I mean, Denmark, for example, some years ago decided it wasn't going to put any more money into building nursing homes. It was actually going to, it took a conscious policy decision to move more supports towards community, so that, you know, if people really did need nursing home care, they got it. But it was in extremis, if you like, because the efforts were being put in towards care in the community. This is the issue. We have regulation almost ready. What we need is how we're going to actually fund it. And I suspect that a key part of the work of this commission will actually be about funding mechanisms. And I would hate it to be just about that. I think it has to be about a wider range of supports. For example, people who want to share. We need legislation to enable people to share houses more easily, to downsize or to cross, to move together, to be able to actually share care hours. Regulations need to be looked at. We need a much more flexible system. And our Red Sea poll was giving us very clear evidence that there's a fair amount of support for new approaches. For example, one of the things that people were kind of strongly interested in was the idea of a GAA for care, a national not-for-profit organization that would provide support and care, but would actually be run on professional lines. Now, that's the kind of Ireland has developed some quite unique social infrastructure in its history. We now need to use that experience and see how do we take that experience and develop a GAA for care, which is kind of to meet the challenge of the social and economic challenges of an aging society.
Can I ask you something just in relation to, I have some friends in the States, and again, there's an awful lot of these centres where people can retire into, and they've got the restaurants, they've got the coffee shops, they've got the care that they need, so the GPs and all that are in there, but yet they live an independent life within it, and they do downsize, and it's the done thing that they do from there. And again, we need to look at that. But somebody said to me actually this morning that if you were building something like a village like that, or if you're building a nursing home, apparently, the person in question said to me, you don't need planning permission. Is that true? Do you know?
Well, you can hardly put up a shed nowadays without planning permission.
We're not going to live in sheds in our old age, Mervyn. Then we're going to stop at that. But I mean, such facilities as, and I know there's one in Tipperary, but such eco facilities and should be put in place, because there's plenty of people, there's a lot more older people, there's a lot more people living longer, and there will be capacity for these people then.
Well, there are fantastic facilities out there, but we don't have enough demonstrator models. I mean, there's a very good facility down in Brough run by CareBright, a social enterprise, and it was part funded by JP McManus. Now, that is an example of a community and, in fact, an area-based partnership sponsoring social enterprise, which would kind of responded in a very sensitive way to the needs of a community. We need more of that. I mean, I've seen a recent application planning from, I think it was a private company for Kildare, where they're planning traditional nursing home, if one can use that term, and they're also planning independent living units, but importantly, because of the problems of staffing and accommodation, they're also planning accommodation for staff. Now, that's the type of thinking that we need. And like there, as I say, there's Respond have done some fantastic work down in Cork and intergenerational work. Jerry Crowley's work up in Mulranny. There's great examples. There's a HSE facility being developed in a household model in Drogheda. There's also a private facility, Moor Hall, there, which is trying to get a household approach, small scale living. These are kind of, it's a wider range of options that we need. And that's why this commission on care is so important.
Listen, well done to you. Keep up the good work. And again, if people want to get further details, they can just go to Sage website and get further details there from there. Well done to Mervyn Taylor for joining us today on the programme. Further details from their website. Keith, at 10:21, traffic is all the way back to Ballindooley Castle on the Headford Road. I've had to cancel my appointment. I'll have to pay for the wasted diesel, and I'm going home as traffic is going nowhere. Bring Em and Ryan down here and tell us again that we can't have a ring road, this caller said. And Keith, this caller said, we'll deal with that as well in a moment. Now though, let me take a short commercial break at this stage. We'll be back just after these. Stay with us. Now, very good morning to you. Welcome into today's programme. Well, good Lord, people are taking the common sense approach when it comes to our next guest, because pharmacists are to be given the power to extend prescriptions. Now, the head of the professional services with the Irish Pharmacy Union, Susan O'Dwyer, joins me on the line. Susan, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us today. A little bit of reason, a bit of common sense is prevailing here, because Minister Stephen Donnelly, who was with us a few weeks ago, just at the time gave us a little hint that new measures will be coming in to give pharmacists increased prescribing powers. And he's confirmed this week, though, it's coming into effect in the new year. This is good news.
Yeah, this is absolutely good news. So Minister Donnelly set up an expert task force on reviewing the role or expanding the role of pharmacy earlier this year. And he asked that task force to review a couple of areas, but particularly kind of prescribing powers. And they've made their first recommendation now. And that first recommendation is that pharmacists should be enabled to extend the validity of prescriptions from the current maximum period, which is 6 months, up to a period of 12 months. And that's where the pharmacist deems that it's safe and appropriate to do so. So, for example, where a patient was maybe stable on their medication, they have a long-term condition. So that should mean that patients have more access points in terms of going to different healthcare professionals to review their prescription and get that extended. So we definitely welcome it.
And was there any pushback, do you know, say, from the GPs and or otherwise? Because up to now, is it 6 months that the prescription is for, and then you'd have to go back and get it renewed and get the GP to send it out from there? So is this a collaboration between the pharmacists and the GPs?
So, up to now, it's been 6 months. Now, through COVID, there was a change where pharmacists could actually extend the validity of a prescription from 6 months to 9 months where they felt it was safe and appropriate to do so. And pretty much all of the pharmacists availed of that opportunity. We surveyed our members recently, about 92% of them had extended prescriptions during COVID. Now, if they felt that it wasn't safe or appropriate, or if the patient needs to be reviewed by the doctor, then they would advise that patient to return to the doctor to get a review of their medication and their condition. And again, about 81% did that at some point. So this isn't necessarily a collaboration between pharmacists and GPs, in that what it is at the minute is a recommendation from the expert task force. But on that task force, there are a lot of different experts with experience in pharmacy education and practice. But there is also doctor representation on there, and people with expertise in policy and delivery. So that group as a whole and as a collective made this recommendation. And we'll be working then closely with all those relevant stakeholders, Department of Health, the PSI, hopefully some of the medical representatives as well, just to understand how this will work in practice.
Susan, your members and pharmacists are very tightly regulated. So does the regulation or the laws around the regulation have to be looked at to bring this in?
Yes, so that's what will happen now. So there'll be moves to change the legislation as it's currently written to allow and enable pharmacists to use these powers. And that will happen, the expected date, from the 1st of March 2024. So there'll be quite a bit of work to do in the meantime. The Department of Health will be drafting that legislation. We expect that our regulator, the Pharmaceutical Society of Ireland, will also be drawing up guidance on how this might work in practice. And as I say, we'll all be working constructively together to facilitate the implementation by the 1st of March.
But I said at the opening statement there that, I mean, this is common sense prevailing here. It's taking pressure off perhaps some of the GP's surgeries as well that are under pressure, and those with long-term illnesses, rather than having to go and be reviewed every 6 months, it can be at the discretion now, in law, of the pharmacist.
Absolutely, yeah, and we very much welcome it for that reason. I mean, patients that have long-term conditions, they know their condition, they know how whether that condition is stable, their medication is working, if they need reviews. So it's recognising that patients also know and understand their condition and can seek help when they need it. And now they're giving those patients an outlet to be able to access a number of different healthcare professionals, so GPs or pharmacists. That, again, as you said, this should open up some further GP appointments, so it provides greater access to a greater range of people, and it just increases or enhances the care that we'll be able to offer in the community as a collective group of healthcare professionals.
And do you think the Irish Pharmacy Union will be pushing further on this one, so that, I mean, pharmacists are very, very well educated, so they are to very high standards, as are GPs, as are other doctors as well. But can you push it a little further, that if somebody needs an ointment or if somebody needs something, and the pharmacist knows that it's not going to cause any difficulty to the person, it can only ease them, be it ointments or something simple, I'm not talking about something major here, and they can dispense it at their own discretion to assist the client or the patient in question, rather than having to wait to go and see a doctor?
Yeah, we would support. So this is the first recommendation, and we hope it's the first in a number of different recommendations that will come out of this task force. And what you've described there is something that we would hope to see coming in the new year, potentially. So pharmacists having even broader kind of prescribing power. So as you say, being able to initiate a medication that they know a patient will need once they've done an assessment of their symptoms. So you often hear us talking about minor ailment scheme or common clinical conditions, and these are, you know, relatively minor self-limiting conditions that you can treat successfully with the help of your pharmacist and yourself as a kind of your own self-care advocate. And we would hope that there'd be a broader range of minor ailments that we'll be able to treat into the future and maybe prescribe treatments for that currently are restricted to prescription only. So hopefully in the new year we'll have some further recommendations from the task force and there'll be even further benefits for patients.
But it's a win-win for the patient, it's a win-win for the industry, it's a win-win for the GPs as well. I mean, and collectively between patient GPs and pharmacists, it should all be working together with one aim, which is to make sure that everybody is kept as healthy and pain-free as they can be.
Absolutely, yeah. And then you've got good access to appropriate care, you know, at what we would call the lowest level of complexity. So you don't need to be an A&E if it's something, a common clinical condition with no red flag symptoms, for example. So it's about all the healthcare professionals working together and providing that care a little bit closer to home where appropriate. And then if there is a need to refer on to other services, other healthcare providers, then we can do that in a timely manner.
Can you see this being in the first quarter, can I ask you, Susan, of next year? Or is it going to go on?
Well, the recommendation is due to take effect from the 1st of March. The task force itself was only set up a number of months ago. So this group are working very efficiently. And the ambition would be that this would be delivered in a timely manner. So I can see if we all work together closely and work out the finer details of how this will be delivered, what resources are required, then we should be able to reach that date.
Because it is critical just to make changes moving forward. It is critical from there that it's done. Susan, thank you indeed for joining us today on the programme, and keep up the great work indeed that you're doing on an ongoing basis. And we look forward indeed to hearing more about this as we get into the new year as well. Susan O'Dwyer joining us there from the Irish Pharmaceutical Union. Thank you indeed for joining us today on the programme. If you want to get in contact with us, you can do so to 086 38 33 55 3 if you want to get in contact with us, and we would like to hear from you today. That's 086 38 33 55 3. And a huge amount of people giving out just about the traffic and how bad the traffic is, and this morning it's just I think it has kind of put an awful lot of people under an awful lot of pressure, and they're venting to us here, but we don't mind that at all. Let me go to Gerard and Nicola Brown, who joins me on the line. Because Galway Garda, you're seeking your assistance today. Garda Nicola Brown, good morning to you.
Good morning, Keith. How are you?
Good. Thanks for joining us today. Now, we have a number of issues we're looking for assistance with today, and we're going to an assault in Ayr Square, and you have some details on this for us.
That's correct. Gardaí are investigating an assault which occurred in Ayr Square on the 1st of November at approximately 3:30 a.m. A male received injuries to his forehead as a result of being assaulted with a bottle. Gardaí are looking to speak to anyone who witnesses assault or asks to contact Garda Conor Rogers in 091 538000 Galway Garda Station.
And do so straight away, please. So that's 1st of November 2023, 3:30, so it would be the night after Halloween there. And again, we're in and around the Earth Square area. We're going to go, Garda Nicola Brown, to a burglary in Ballinasloe as well.
That's correct. Gardaí and Ballinasloe are investigating a burglary which occurred in Colmanstown, Ballinasloe, on the 3rd of November between 9:30 a.m. and 7 p.m. A collection of watches were stolen from the house. Anyone who may have seen any suspicious activity in the area or may have any information are asked to contact Ballinasloe Garda Station on 090-96-31890 or the Garda Confidential Line 1800-666-111.
All right. Again, this is a worrying one, so it is. It's robbery from a person is the headline on this one, but this happened in the city.
That's correct. We're looking for information in relation to robbery from a person. We're investigating an incident which occurred in the vicinity of Ballyban Church on the 6th of November at approximately 3:13 a.m. in which a taxi driver was stopped by two male pedestrians and money was demanded from the taxi driver. Any road users who may have dash cam footage and were travelling on the Castle Park Road or Schlievera Estate between 2:30 a.m. and 3:30 a.m. on Sunday night, Monday morning, the 6th of November, are asked to make this footage available to Gardaí. And Gardaí are looking to speak to anyone who witnessed these persons of interest or may have any information. They're asked to contact Galway Garda Station 091 538 000 or the Garda Confidential Line on 1800 666 111.
Very a frightening experience indeed for the taxi driver, Garda Nicola Brown in question. A real frightening experience for them. Can you assist in any way? And if you can, again, just contact Galway Garda on 538 000. Now, you're going to a theft in Loughrea there as well.
That's correct, Keith. Garda and Loughrea are investigating the theft which occurred at Kilnadema Church, Loughrea, on the 31st of October between 8:30 a.m. and 5:15 p.m. The collection box in the church was prized open and cash was taken. And Garda are looking to speak to anyone who witnessed any suspicious activity or indeed who may have any information or asked to contact Loughrea Garda Station on 091 842 877 or the Garda Confidential Line on 1800 666 111.
Now, Garda Nicola Brown, we're looking at road safety advice and lighting up your bike as well. Not alone your bike, but your person if you're on a dark road. But you've got some full details for us there.
Yeah, Keith, just with the limited daylight hours with the time change, Garda are advising cyclists to have lights on the front and rear of the bicycles and to wear reflective items of clothing to make sure they're seen and safe on the roads. And the message is to be safe and be seen. Galway City Council were out last night along with a few councillors and provided free lights for members of the public there. So that was a great initiative. So just the message is be safe and be seen.
Absolutely. And don't forget those high-vis jackets as well, Garda Brown, Garda Nicola Brown. I was coming out the N59, the Mycullen Road, on Sunday night about 9 o'clock and there was somebody at Killeen Corner there just on that road and they were dressed in black and they had nothing on them at all. Just common sense and mind yourself. Garda Nicola Brown, thank you for joining us today on the programme. If you can assist Galway Garda in any way, and you know any member of Garda Síochána, do confide in them. But again, if you know anything about that assault in Eyre Square, which is just horrific, the burglary in Ballinasloe, and the robbery from the person at Ballyban Church. And again, we had an incident there on the 31st as well, with some youths there as well. I wonder, same gang, the theft in Loughrea from Kilnadema Church. I mean, how low can you really go on that one? And again, just light up your bike, please. Thank you to Garda Nicola Brown for joining us today on the programme. Quick commercial break. We're back just after these. We're looking at food waste. Now, very good morning to you. I have to say the traffic situation has dominated all the comment lines today. This caller said, Keith, 1 hour from Barnet Village to Knocknacarrow. Traffic is absolutely bananas out here today. In relation to prescriptions and pharmacists being able to extend them, it helps to save money and time wasting to be seen by GPs and going to A&E. Another caller said, Keith, what about if a person dies and the chemist is not aware? Does it cause a lot of selling tablets, etc., if the family of criminals? I know a little bit about it and maybe I'm a little bit OTT. And other calls coming into us there today, so let's go with it from there. Now, I was reading the brief for today's programme yesterday evening and last night, and the EPA is helping businesses in County Galway to show their commitment to fight food waste with the Food Waste Charter. I'm joined on the line by Odile Leboc, Leboloc as well today. Sorry, I'll do that again. Odile Leboloc. Good morning to you, Odile. Thank you for joining us today.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm good. What a lovely surname you have altogether there. Thank you for joining us today. It's a lovely surname. Listen, food waste. Now, we're looking at businesses on this, but we're also food waste at home. But the EPA, you're helping people because 1/3 of all food produced for human consumption is wasted, generating up to 10% of the global greenhouse gas emissions.
Yeah, and I suppose our message at the moment is focusing on business, because over 70% of the food waste generated in Ireland comes from the food supply chain. And we do a lot of work with households, giving them tips and things on what they can do. And now is our time to start talking to businesses. And what we find is a lot of businesses don't actually realise that how much food they waste, you know. And really what we're trying to do with the charter is just bring about that consistent approach by measuring your food waste to understand, give you the data, which gives you hard, cold facts on where you should be focusing your efforts. And that's the whole purpose of the charter.
And I take it, Odile, they're not doing it on purpose, but it's an education process that you have to go through with them.
Yeah, and to be honest, it's not even that. It's, you know, if your business is food and you're throwing away food, you're throwing away your profit. So, you know, it's a no-brainer. And not only that, but it's also really important about addressing climate, as you mentioned earlier. But what you find is just businesses are focused on doing what they do. You know, they don't have time to be looking at all these other peripheral things. So really what we're trying to do is just bring it into focus and say, gee, you know, this is actually worth your attention if you spend a bit of time on this. That you'll save money. And what it's actually about then is changing some of your processes. So for example, if you're a food manufacturing business, you might find when you start to look at it that maybe there's a piece of equipment that just needs slightly calibrating, or maybe you need a bit more staff training, or, you know, maybe there's something else that you need to do. Not only that, but maybe you find that there's a whole waste stream coming out that you could valorize and get money for as well. You know, and similarly in kind of food services sector, you might just find, you know, your portions are too big, or there's too much prep waste coming out of the kitchen. Maybe it's a staff training issue. So this is all about if you go and actually start to measure your food waste. And we've got tools on, you know, to help people do that. And that'll help you identify where you need to focus.
I mean, when you look at a business and they put a business plan together for a business. So if they're starting up a business, a food business, that is, they put the business plan together. In olden days, they would put in a percentage for wastage. So really what we're asking them to do there is to put 0% in for wastage. And
yeah, well, definitely reduce this.
Yeah, or a little bit of common sense. But I spoke to somebody who's in the bakery business recently, and they always had a fully stocked bakery. The shelves were always stocked. They had all their bread on it and their confectories and all that. But they found that they were selling bread cheap late in the evening because they had stock, but they reduced their stock by 20%. Now they run out earlier in the day. They mightn't have it by 4:30 in the evening or 4:00 in the evening, but there's no wastage. They've reduced it, so they've no wastage at all.
These are amazing stories. I love hearing these types of stories because that's exactly what, you know, what we're talking about here. Why it might be, you know, a change to how you've always done business, and that can be kind of difficult sometimes to make that shift. But, you know, part of that also involves communication with your customers, and you'll find that those customers now know, God, you don't go in there in the evening and expect to get a fresh loaf because that's just not available. So they know, get in early, get what you need early. And, you know, I think we've become a bit conditioned to that you do expect to go in, you know, to a supermarket at the end of the day, and you expect to see the same freshness of stuff that was there earlier in the day. And a lot of that does generate waste. So there is kind of some things we need to do, but I think it's really important that the business communicates with their customers to explain why they're doing certain things. And that's a really good example of how they obviously found this was an issue for them. They did something about it, and they've reduced waste in the process. And you'll find as well that they're saving money doing that as well.
And I think the retailers that we're talking about today, they also have to educate people on sell-by and use-by dates as well.
Yeah, well, actually, and to be honest, when it comes to bread, it's best before. And what we do find is people actually do know the differences between a use-by and a best before date, but they don't, the behaviour doesn't reflect their knowledge. So, and we're not rational humans. This is the problem. Mm-hmm. And so what we're trying to do a bit there is make sure that people are aware that best before doesn't mean bad after. You can use food after that date, and it's worth you trying it and testing it and seeing is it okay, does it taste okay. And I think the more we get people to reflect their knowledge by the behaviour, the less food will be thrown away. And it's actually, householders tell us it's one of the main reasons they throw away food is because it's past its best before date. And there's nothing wrong with food after a best before date.
Yet, Odile, when you look at our TV screens now, and some nights I don't even turn on the news anymore because there's so much hardship out there, right across. I mean, if we take what's happening in Ukraine and right across indeed Israel and then into Gaza and right across the world, and indeed when you see some of the video footage coming in from some of the other states, you know, out there, it's just, there's a lot of hunger, it's a lot of poverty, a lot of hunger out there. Not that we can do anything about it in those areas except to donate to charities like Self Help Africa and otherwise, but we just to control what we have ourselves and you know to be wise about what we buy.
Yeah, and you know, actually, I've been working on foodways for quite a number of years, and you know, I find it's actually one of the few environmental issues where you don't need to convince people there is a problem. You know, when you start to talk about foodways, now most people don't think, you know, they waste a lot of food, which is something that we all do need to wake up to and have a look at what we are wasting ourselves. But most people, there is that moral side aspect of it as well. You know, like food is, it's embedded in everything we do. It's how we show love, it's how we care for our family, it's how we get together for social occasions, you know, so it's more than just something we buy. And I think that's the thing people recognize. You know, you speak to anyone and they're, God, I hate wasting food. And really what we're talking about here, and it's the same in a business as well, it's just behaviors that have built up over time, and to try and undo and unpick those behaviors, you need reminders, you need to know what behaviors will have the most impact if you change. So same in a business where you see where you're wasting the food most, how you can change that. It's the same at home. What are the top three things you throw out regularly? Look at those. You don't have to solve everything all in one go. Just start to look at stuff systematically, and that'll help us all deal with the problem. But definitely, you've already fought the moral battle on this. People definitely agree that wasting food is wrong. And, you know, and that's not even to do with the environmental impact. No, but even no. If you think about that, like when you throw away food, you're throwing away all the resources that have gone in to make that food as well. So it's not just about food waste. It's about, you know, kind of all everything that's gone in to make that food as well.
I think it's historical. It goes back indeed to the old famine days as well, that you have to have a full fridge and you have to have it stocked. You know, it's, but like with all due respects to a lot of people, depending on where you're living now, if you're very remote, no, but you're within 15, 20 minutes or half an hour of a shop. Most people in this country are.
Yeah, and even look, this is, we'll probably talk again quite soon when it comes to Christmas, because that's exactly one of the things that's magnified, where we go out and we buy too much because, God forbid, someone will call and we don't have 50 million things to offer them, you know, and it's like the shops will reopen again in a few days' time. And similarly for businesses, you just mentioned that, you know, about hospitality and showing, you know, generous portions. It's one of the main concerns of businesses in the food sector, is that they'll be seen as mean if they reduce their portion sizes. And it's back to, yet again, communicating with your customers. It doesn't have to be you're only getting this amount. It's, you know, let them know, see how you get on with this. If you want something more, we'll bring you something more. You know, it's all about, that's how you can show hospitality and reduce food waste at the same time. So we're really big on that. You know, when you've identified what you need to do, you just need to communicate to people and let them know the reasons for doing it. And most people are reasonable. As I said, you've already fought the battle where they don't want to waste food, so they kind of go, ah, that's grand, so I get it, I understand where you're coming from. And you know, as I said, this is actually, it's not only about the science behind measuring your food waste, it's about people, it's about communication, and it's about behavior change, which is, you know, all social sciences as well. So it's really complex, and I suppose that's the thing, that's why we're pushing people to come and sign the food waste charter. It'll help you work through kind of in your business how you measure your food waste and identify where best to focus your action, and then you can make some real meaningful action as well.
Odile, how can they sign up to this charter?
Yeah, it's great. Look, we have, if they come to foodwastecharter.ie, you'll find the form there where you pledge, and you're pledging to measure your food waste and then, you know, take action as well. And actually, we've an online event on Thursday. You'll find information on that same website. If they want to hear a little bit more, if they're a food business and they'd like to hear a bit more, they can get details there on how to sign up and register for that event as well.
And it's supposed, from a business point of view, they're looking at their costs all the time. But if they reduce their food waste, they're going to reduce their disposal cost. And it's quite expensive now to dispose of food waste as well. So there's, you know, it's the common sense approach. And if you don't have enough salmon in for the client that's coming in, or you've kind of decided that you're buying X amount of salmon, they'll have to pick something else off the menu.
Yeah, and look, it's not only your waste disposal cost, but it is actually your bottom line, because this is your profit you're throwing away. You know, yeah. These are your raw ingredients that you're actually throwing away. And sometimes they're cooked ingredients. So you've even put the staff time, you know, refrigeration, buying costs and all of that. So you're obviously paying for a waste contractor, but that's all the costs that have gone into that food as well. And as you say, you know, there's so many ways. It's back to that communication piece, you know, that you say to someone, sorry, we've no bread left. left. We've no salmon left. Here's something we do have. Or, you know, it's just about that, yet again, making sure people understand why you're doing what you're doing, that you're not, you know, you're not sort of making it out that, oh, we're just reducing costs and nobody needs to know about it. It's that kind of communication with people so that people understand where it's coming from.
It's a fascinating charter. I hope you get good buy-in to it, Odile, indeed, Le Bolloc. And I hope you do get some buy-in to it. Will you let us know if you do? Come back to us for Christmas, by the way, as well. Because Christmas in our house, we tend to overbuy all right. But, you know, a little bit of common sense. There's only four of us. Like, we're not going to... I'd love to come back.
It's a bit too soon now, but definitely I'd love to.
All right, listen, we'll come back to you on this one. Odile, thank you so much for joining us today. And if you want to get further details, go to, again, Food Waste Charter, and Odile Le Bolloc joining us there from the EPA. Yet to come in the programme, by the way, in the next hour, we'll be looking at the whole postal situation in the city. A few people are quite distressed about that. Also on today's programme, we'll be joined by Áine Killalane studio. We'll be speaking too about a call to speed up the end of exclusions for female farmers and their pension rights as well today. So that and more between now and the end of today's programme. Let's stay tuned for that and more. Again, 086 38 33 553. You can WhatsApp us or you can message us to that. And I have quite a few comments that I have to give to you, and I will do so just after the news as well. So that number again, 086 38 33 553, if you want to get in contact with us. Agus Anish on Nooks.